broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I was sitting in a preview in a movie theater over the weekend.
And my wife said, if you're going to do something about it, go do something about it. So I said, I'm going to go.
Can I get you something?
It's a mofo, butter laying into the bone.
Jewel is 15 years old.
I'm Fred Thompson, and I approve this message.
Bastard from a basket!
Excuse me, world famous Phil Hendry show. I choked on something. World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Maybe I'm choking on the words I'm having to speak here. Anyway, truth is our bitch. And through the looking glass we go, places where other talk shows can't go, here every night. PhilHendryShow.com, the strong right arm of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, where live streaming video of our show is right now, man. And you can get it not only on your desktop, your laptop, your iPad. You can watch it on your mobile if you have an Android or Evo phone. And soon to come, on-demand video on your iPhone from the Phil Hendry Show. Pick up a backstage pass. We've got all kinds of archived material you can listen to, as well as our current podcast. God, what do I got in my throat here, man?
Want some water?
Yeah, give me some water. I got a can of Pepsi here. I mean, what's the difference, you know?
How's that?
That's fine.
God, man, I do it off the air or something.
Well, what do you want me to do, man? I got like this allergy, I guess. That's what I got. I have these allergies, and they all of a sudden start hitting me at the weirdest time, like right now, you know, when I'm talking. Funny how that happens. All right, anyway, welcome to the show, the last hour of the show. And this is our news hour. I got Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard along the way. Now, this is ordinarily a story I would have thrown in the garbage can, because I don't personally care any longer where they think bin Laden is. I don't know how we're going to find out about the demise of Osama bin Laden. I'm pretty sure that we will find out about his demise, but I don't know how it's going to happen. I suspect that when it happens, it will be similar to what happened to that Zawahiri, that scumbag that ran al-Qaeda in Iraq. Remember they hit that farmhouse he was in?
Oh, yeah, man. He was laying on the ground and saw the troops trying to get away.
Yeah, he didn't have no legs or anything. He's trying to crawl away.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. I mean, they blowed it up. He tried to get away. The guy's like got half his body blown apart, you know, and all that.
Oh, he was still alive, huh?
Yeah. He seen the troops, and he tried to crawl away with no legs.
Oh, God. Well, you know what? Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, that piece of garbage. I suspect that's how it's going to happen to bin Laden. All of a sudden, he's going to be sitting down to a nice breakfast or maybe a nice lunch of clam chowder, and he has on the Cubs game, and the next thing you know, boom! And he'll be looking up with, like, what's left of his body, and there'll be a special forces guy standing over him, smiling and saying, "Hi, how you doing there, Osama? Good? Huh? You don't look too good." That's the way it's, and then he'll check out, you know?
You think so? I mean, they're not going to be able to bring him back and put him on trial, huh?
I don't think so, but I'll tell you, Holder should have answered that question anyway, and quit playing it cute, man, okay? This ain't got nothing to do with you working for Obama. You could be working for Bush. But when they ask you, are you going to put this guy on trial in New York City or at the military tribunal in Guantanamo, answer the question. Don't go, well, it'll never happen. It'll never happen. It'll never happen. I don't answer these hypotheticals. Well, you're being asked a question by the senator. Anyway, I'm not really much interested. And one of the reasons why I'm not much interested, it isn't that I'm not interested in the information. I'm not much interested in who's saying it. Here's the headline today. NATO official, bin Laden living comfortably in Pakistan. Is that right? Bin Laden living comfortably in Pakistan. Well, do I believe that? I don't believe some of the reasons they give for why he may be living comfortably in Pakistan. For instance, they say he's living comfortably in Pakistan because he is being protected by certain members of the Pakistani intelligence. Well, here's why I don't believe that. It's not that I don't believe Pakistani intelligence may be purchased for a handsome price. I don't think bin Laden's stupid enough to entrust his security to Pakistani intelligence or to even entrust to them the knowledge of his whereabouts. I don't think he can't possibly be that dumb because he's still walking around. At least that's what they tell us. And that's about the dumbest thing you could do. Oh, well, you're here courtesy of the good grace of Pakistani intelligence. Well, thanks a lot, but no thanks.
Well, what do you say that for?
Because that, what do you mean, what do I say that for?
You can, man, that kill him.
They're not going to kill him. They're being paid.
Paid? Let me ask you something, man. If the Pakistanis wanted to get paid, who are they going to go to, Bin Laden or us?
Dude, we're in a recession.
It doesn't make any difference, bud.
Well, it don't make no difference in a recession, man. We got all the money in the world, man.
Bud, you look at, if the Pakistanis, you know, want to get paid, man, they go to the man with the money, okay? They ain't going to go to Bin Laden. Sure, he's got bread. We got more bread than God. I don't care if we are in a recession. We got it. The EU has it. The Russians have it. All kinds of money, man. The Pakistanis are doing it because they're getting paid. They get paid from us.
Well, maybe they're getting paid from us and him.
No. Because while Bin Laden ain't dumb, neither are we. Not to that extent. We ain't laying money on those cats to do what? To find him? No. We'll lay money on those guys to kill him. We'll lay money on those guys to get him and bring him to us. But that's, you know, that's, what do they call it? Cash on delivery, man. COD. And these guys that saying, oh, they're being paid off by Bin Laden, and that's why they're protecting him. Look, they may think that that's what they want to do, and maybe that's what their intent is. Bin Laden ain't that stupid. But here's the thing that really is makes me laugh. I mean, I'm laughing until I'm sick when I see this stuff, and you should too, folks. Believe me, you should too. Because you have been inundated with this jackass and that jackass and this expert and that expert. We had Richard Clark. Then we had George Tenet. Then we had, all these guys. They warned everybody. And, if only anyone listened to them. Does anybody really still believe that stuff?
You talk about the guy about Bin Laden, right?
What do you mean, am I talking about Bin Laden? Yeah, I'm talking about the guys that were warning or so-called warning us about Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Does anybody still believe that those jackasses were a lone voice in the wilderness, and if only somebody had listened. Is anyone still buying that? Because I'm telling you, here's the thing that I thought was funny about the story. The NATO official's comments. Now, this is the NATO official said that Bin Laden is living comfortably, he's being protected by tribal chieftains, and he's living in a part of Pakistan where he is also being protected by members of the country's intelligence service. Don't believe that. For a minute, don't believe that. The news undercuts the U.S. government's depiction of the Al-Qaeda leader as on the run, one terror expert tells Yahoo News. And who is this terror expert? Well, this is a guy named Michael Schuer, S-C-H-E-U-E-R, a former, get this, special advisor to the chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit. Wow, that's an impressive name.
Well, yeah, but he ought to know.
Really? Yeah, you better believe he ought to know. As a matter of fact, this guy says, quote, it exposes the lie. I love that. Here comes that word again. The lie that Bush and Obama have been telling us since 9/11, that he was running from rock to rock and cave to cave. Telling you, Michael? Well, you were the former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit. Nobody can lie to you, right? How come we got the former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit? Then we got the former guy that ran the terror thing. And then we got the former guy that ran the CIA. And we got another former guy that did this. Another former guy that did that. And all these guys, boy, are they brain surgeons. They got it all figured out. And they know exactly what's wrong. And they know what we got to do now. And when they were in the actual job, they couldn't find their ass with both hands, as my dear departed father used to say.
Yeah, they probably would have done their job better then. Then be writing a book about it.
Well, that's all I want to do, write a book.
That's right. You got that one right, Robert. All they want to do is write a book. Here is the unnamed NATO official. Nobody in Al-Qaeda is living in a cave. All right. Now, this guy, sure, who's been an outspoken critic of the U.S. approach to fighting Al-Qaeda, yes, I'm sure he has been, hasn't he? He said it's unlikely that the comments reflect any valuable new piece of information. If this were genuine intel, they would not go public with it, he said. They would try to kill him. Yes. But you see, this is also genuine intel, or maybe it isn't genuine intel, that you don't know about, Michael, because you got your thumb parked up your rear end, man. You don't know anything about anything. You didn't know anything about anything when you were running the, what is it again? Oh, the special advisor to the chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit. I don't know about you guys, but I've had enough of these guys that were Brain Surgeon One, you know, Manny Moe and Jack or whoever, the three stooges of the CIA, and these guys knew it all. And if only anybody had been listening to them, why, hell, we wouldn't be in all the problem that we're in. You know what? That guy Clark, that's the guy that really frosted my ass, man. That guy was in that job for 10 years at least prior to 9/11.
You're kidding.
No, I ain't kidding, man. That guy was the head of the so-called terror whatever, you know. And for 10 years, this guy held on to his job during the coal bombing, during the World Trade Center bombing, during the bombing of the embassies in Africa. This jackass had that job. Even Bush didn't fire him. Until finally, after 9/11, he got his ass kicked out of there. And guess what he does? He gets all crybaby about it, goes in front of a Senate subcommittee, and apologizes to the families, we let you down. No, you let us down there, Richard. You and this clown, Michael Schur, all of these guys protecting their rear ends, all of these guys protecting their future publishing opportunities by saying, yep, there's nothing like Bush and Obama. Yeah, if they'd only listen to me. If they only listened to you, yeah, they'd listen to you if you passed your latest psych test.
They're probably nuts, man. That's why they kick him out of there.
I don't know if they kicked this guy out or he quit. Here's another guy, Brian Katulis, a national security expert at the Center for American Progress, whatever that is. He also downplayed the comments. There's always been a sharp focus on how do we close the chapter by capturing or killing Bin Laden. I don't know that the NATO officials' comments are based on anything new or real. In other words, it's not even news. It's not new, it's not real, but it's nothing, you know, these guys didn't have it. And then we have Navy Admiral Michael Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, expressed optimism that Bin Laden and his deputy Ayman al-Zawahiri would eventually be caught. Well, let's not believe him because he happens to be part of the administration. Let's make fun of those guys through Mr. Michael Schur. The evidence that Bin Laden's living in relative comfort and stability cuts against that expectation. The evidence? We got a comment from a NATO guy. Maybe it's disinformation. Maybe it's misinformation. Anyway, this guy Schur says, we're just facing reality at last. Bin Laden lives among people who, A, regard him as an Islamic hero, and B, whose tribal mores require them to protect a guest with their own lives. Schur continued, despite what our leaders are saying, a guy who's not moving around is not vulnerable to attack. When he was vulnerable to attack, Mr. Schur, what did you do about it? Well, I'm not going to blame you because the record is clear. It's as clear as the nose on your face, bud.
Yeah.
The record is clear that every time they had this guy dead to rights, every time they had him in his sights, the record's very clear. And this is during President Clinton. And I don't blame President Clinton. He didn't know what they, you know. If people want to blame Bush, then I blame Clinton. If people are going to climb off of Bush's back about this, then I'll climb off of Clinton's back too. But the fact is, Clinton had operational, what do they call it? You know, actionable intelligence.
Yeah, they call it like operational, you know, where they go in there, operational, you know?
Yeah, their intelligence is...
All right, I understand. They had actionable intelligence, and they didn't want to attack because there might be collateral damage. They had actionable intelligence after the coal got blown to bits and those men died. Now Clinton says, well, you know, I guess we're going to have collateral damage, but then they called it off for some other damn reason. So... How is it that this stuff is on the record? It is historical fact. Historical fact. And yet, these jackballs sell this. Bush, man, Bush, he butchered. Oh, God, Bush. You don't have to be a fan of Bush, but at least be a fan of the truth, you know. At least be a fan of, well, here's what happened, and we know what happened. We have the record. It's very clear what happened. Here's this guy, Michael Schur, on leaving the CIA. Here's a quote. I resigned from the agency I love in order to publicly damn the feckless 9/11 Commission, which failed to find any personal failure or negligence among intelligence community leaders, even though dozens of serving officers provided the commissioners with clear documentary evidence of that failure. Also, because I really didn't have a fast track to the top, and I was kind of just being wasted and lost because my ideas were really unsound, and I was very weird, and I smelled bad, and nobody wanted me there, and that's really what the problem was. Signed, Michael Schweinhund. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. More news, more weirdness. Starbucks may... Well, this isn't weird. This is good news. Starbucks may be serving booze soon. New York City teachers... Yeah, really.
What are they getting, like, beer?
I don't know. New York City teachers are canned for flirting with students over Facebook. Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I'll do the sale, I'll do that.
Yeah, I'll do the Junior Seau story because this is wild.
Who's he?
Junior Seau used to play football for the San Diego Chargers.
But they call him Junior.
Because that's his name, Junior.
Why? What's his name?
His name's Junior. That's his name.
He's from Hawaii, man. They call a lot of people over there Junior.
What? What are you talking about, man?
They do. As a matter of fact, there have been a lot of football players from Hawaii named Junior. There was Junior something. I don't know. They've been a bunch of Juniors, man.
What are you talking about, a bunch of Juniors?
They call a guy who come from Hawaii Junior.
Understand?
Not really.
Well, I don't either, but that's Junior Seau. There was a junior that came from Hawaii. Hold on. I'm getting a little moisture in my throat here. Junior Oda or some crap like that. He played in Canada. Anyway, it's kind of like there's a lot of guys named John, you know?
What, in America?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys named John. Well, over in Hawaii, there's a lot of cats named Junior. I don't know. Former NFL linebacker Junior Seau drove his car off a cliff near a Carlsbad, California beach early this morning, just hours after being released from jail. When I say early this morning, I mean yesterday morning. That would be Sunday morning. Just hours after being released from jail following a domestic violence arrest. Oh, my God. Was he trying to kill himself?
Sounded like it.
His white Cadillac SUV was found on the beach about 30 feet below the roadside, said Carlsbad Police Lieutenant Kelly Kane. Kane said it wasn't a sheer cliff, but it was a significant rough slope. Seau, whom police say was conscious, was pulled from the vehicle by law enforcement officials. This accident sparked rumors that Seau was trying to commit suicide. According to TMZ.com, Seau told police it wasn't a suicide attempt, insisting he merely fell asleep at the wheel. The former New England Patriot player, he's also a member of the San Diego Chargers, was the only passenger inside the Cadillac SUV and is conscious and in hospital. Is this some foreign news service? They always say in hospital if it's British. No, it's ABC. Well, that's sort of foreign.
Yeah.
Anyway, is recovering and in hospital, recovering from minor injuries. Seau, age 41, was arrested on a charge of felony spousal assault with injury after a dispute with his 25-year-old live-in girlfriend, according to the Oceanside Police Department. The victim sustained minor injuries that did not require medical attention. The victim has not yet been identified. ABC News has confirmed the woman's name, but is withholding it unless they're paid enough, and then they'll... I'm kidding.
They're going to get mad for you to say that.
Well, don't make it sound like you guys are so special over there at ABC. Well, we're withholding the name. The woman's stepmother told ABC News that she was upset about the alleged abuse of her stepdaughter. My heart is broken. We're all praying. We just hope she's safe. Do you think a lawsuit, we could be included in that? And on that, she said, with hopeful-looking eyes, and then she just sat down and clutched a handkerchief. Anyway, Seau was arrested just after midnight. That would be midnight Sunday, after his girlfriend called the cops following a dispute. Cops arrived at Seau's home, but he had fled. Fled? Well, I guess you call it fled.
Yeah, he knew the cop would come and he fled.
Yeah, but what if he's just going to go get some donuts or something?
Well, you going to go get donuts, man, if your girlfriend calls the cops?
I think we can safely say that he was trying to get out of there, bud. Let's put it that way, okay? Going to get donuts.
Well, it's early.
Yeah, okay.
Well, Spud Nut's open then, man. But they're 24 hours, but I don't think he's thinking about Spud Nut.
You know, I can't understand you saying, Spud Nut, man.
All right, well, you know, you're babbling away.
I said Spud Nut.
You guys are talking about him going to get Spud Nuts? Is that what you think he was doing?
It's possible.
I don't think so. I think this guy knew that his girlfriend called the cops, and I think he was fleeing the scene, as they said in Fargo. Fleeing the interview. Anyway, the former star linebacker was booked by, at Vista Detention Facility and released around 3:30 a.m. after he posted bail. 5 hours later, he drove his car off a cliff overlooking the beach. No charges or traffic citations have been filed. Seau is a 12-time Pro Bowler. Oh, boy. Calls made to his foundation were not returned.
Maybe he died.
There's more than him sitting at the foundation. We'll be back. Americans will spend more money on Halloween this year than last year. Where are we getting the dough? Maybe the recession's over. Maybe not.
Phil Hendry.
Maybe we're just spending it anyway.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Seattle, Washington, if you thought the coffee at Starbucks was addictive, wait till you try the beer and the wine. Starbucks is experimenting with adult beverages at one of its learning lab locations in Seattle. The coffee chain said Monday that it's reopened its Olive Way store in the city's Capitol Hill neighborhood after an extensive redesign. Starbucks Learning Labs test new menu items and concepts to see if they would work in their other locations nationwide. Is this beer and wine?
Yeah. No, I don't gonna go into that.
I don't usually go into beer and wine joints myself. I you know what I'm saying?
Why not?
I just, that, why? You know, if I'm going to go into a bar, I want to go into a bar. You know, what is this beer and wine? What if I want something, you know, like
You drink tequila anyway.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if I'm going to go into a bar, hi, this is a bar. Oh, that's great. May I have a shot of whiskey? No, we only serve beer and wine. Well, what are you talking about, man? So I don't know that I want to go into a bar, unless it's a restaurant. I've been to restaurants, which, by the way, I was talking on the pre-show, and I really want to say that I'm not getting paid. This is not a paid endorsement. But we found a restaurant in Ventura over the weekend called, get a load of this, My Florist.
What do you call it that for?
They call it My Florist because the original was opened in a historic building in Phoenix, a historically protected building, and apparently there'd been a florist in there because on the front of the building it said My Florist, and they didn't change the sign. So he just named his restaurant My Florist, and now they have one in Ventura. And I'm telling you, this place is gorgeous, and it is well, I don't want to go on and on about it. The whole reason why I'm bringing this up, though, is when I sat in this joint, I thought, well, this place is really nice. It's very comfortable. They've got a beautiful sort of patio that's on the street. So it's like sidewalk dining, but it's just, you know, protected enough where you feel as if you are also inside the restaurant. And I thought, well, this joint's got to be just beer and wine. It's too nice. It's too new and it's too nice. No, they had a full liquor license and they had a huge tequila menu.
Yeah, but we're talking about Starbucks, man. You just did a plug for some guy nobody ever heard of.
Well, I'm glad I did, okay?
Yeah, but you could get in trouble.
I'm not going to get in trouble. I'm not getting paid. It ain't payola. Nobody's paying my ass. It was a place I went to, a little place in Ventura. It's a great joint. Yeah, and I mentioned them, My Florist. Why am I supposed to be giving Starbucks all these free publicity? Why? Because they're thinking about serving wine and beer? You got to be some kind of a... I'm telling you, I should shut my mouth, but I don't think you're much of a wine connoisseur if you're going into Starbucks for a glass of wine. Tell you that much.
What are you talking about, man? I mean, they could have like a very fine Cabernet. What do you call it? Cabernet Sauvignon and
it's Cabernet Sauvignon. Okay.
What about the other ones, like peanut? The peanut one.
What peanut one?
Yeah, peanut. This one.
Pinot Noir and Pouilly Fouché.
Yeah, it looks like a different word.
Well, shut up. And then this one here is Petit Sirah.
What about a gay name like that, man?
Look at dude. It's the name of the grape. It's the name of the grape. You understand the grape? It's not, what do you mean the gay name? It's the name of the grape. Have you ever seen a Cabernet grape?
Uh-uh.
They're really tiny, little tiny Cabernet grape. So these are the grapes, and the name there on that label of that bottle, where'd you get that bottle anyway?
I just found it in the garbage.
Yeah, huh? That's the name of the vineyard. That's the name of the grape. And that is the year that they, bottled it, man.
How come it's better when it's way older and everything?
Wine gets better with age. Good wine gets better with age. Now, there is a way of... I'm not going to go into a whole wine drinking thing. What the hell am I talking... We're talking about Starbucks, okay? Long way, man, from good wine. In a brief statement announcing the reopening of the store, Starbucks said it's offering wine and beer after 4 p.m. because we have so many alcoholics that come in here. No, they didn't say that. They said...
You're going to get in trouble talking all that smack about Starbucks when you talk about my floors.
So I gave my floors the plug, man. Why do I... Let me ask you a question. Where is it written that I give Starbucks a plug-a-roo once a week with some story, some jive story that they've pumped out of their press relations office about, oh, hey, Starbucks, we're going to start selling wine. We're going to start selling beer. You talk about free publicity. On the menu, regional beer and wine and local cheese and cured meats. What?
Dude, what does that mean, like, cured meat?
I don't know, man, but smile when you say that.
Yeah, the cured meat, that scared me, too.
That'd scare any reasonable human being. What does that mean, cured meats? Cheese and wine? Since when are people... You know, I'm telling you, we're losing our minds. We were into that cheese and cured meats thing maybe 20 years ago. People still into that? And you're going to go to Starbucks for that? No way. You know, I'll tell you a place. I went into a department store, in Paris, France, and it was called the Lafayette Square. What it's called, the Lafayette whatever the hell. All right, it's like the Lafayette Galleria. Let's call it that. Okay,
where is this?
In Paris, France.
That's another country.
Yeah, that would be another country, bud. Yeah.
Wow, man, you stupid.
No, I don't know where it is.
In Paris, France. Anyway, I went in, and this place is fantastic. You've never been in a department store quite like this. Very relaxing, a lot of nice things. But when you get to a certain floor there, I guess the fourth floor, this is where all of the, not only the kitchen supplies are and the kitchen features and pots and pans and knives and also foods, you know, and they have a restaurant in there. And it was one of the greatest experiences to sit down and eat just in this setting, because you're shopping and then you sit down and they want to continue the shopping experience. So they say, well, senor or senorita or whatever the hell.
They usually say like monsieur.
Yeah, monsieur. It's called the Galeries Lafayette. All right. And
you just did French talk.
It's called French, bud. France talk.
Man, why don't you shut up, man?
I'm just asking a question.
That's called French. Well, not only is the shopping experience, see, oh, well, monsieur, what would you like? And I said, well, I think what I had was like beef tenderloin or some jazz. It was lunch. But, you know, you get into the thing of the French, man, they don't hurry for nothing, man. And when they sit down and eat, they take a bite of this. That's very nice. Then they have another bite of that thing and a little bit of cheese. And they sit back and they fold their arms and they look around and kind of, you know, contemplate their navel. Then they go back, and they have the wine, and they're talking to the guy. Well, why don't you try this wine? Take a sip of that. And you know what? No wonder they live long over there, man. You know, they don't have any heart attack over there.
What do you mean?
They don't have heart attack over there.
Yeah, I heard about they don't have no heart attack, even though they're eating all kind of fat. Like, they're fat ass.
They don't have fat asses over there, man. They eat a lot of cream, and they eat a lot of cheese, and they drink a lot of wine. But those cats over there in France, they don't have strokes. They don't have heart attacks, nothing. You want to know why I think it is? Because everything is chill, you know. They eat at a nice, reasonable pace. Now, I understand we can't do that in America because we are busy creating things and keeping the world safe, and the French can sit on their ass and do nothing. Now then, I'm kidding. I didn't mean that, you French people. You're very good people. And I used to hate you, but not anymore. Now then.
Yeah, me too.
All right. But no, so they're very relaxed when they eat stuff, you know?
What do you mean relaxed, man?
Are there, well, I shouldn't say it, but what, are you talking about their bowel movements?
No, I'm not talking about their bowel movements, man.
What are you talking about, man?
Well, you said they're relaxed.
When they're eating. And they do this and they do that. It's very relaxing, and they, oh, well, you know, monsieur, if you'd like the cheeses, over here, and you go over on the same level. And then they have a restaurant on the roof of the Galeries Lafayette, and you go up on the roof, and you have your tea and whatever the hell it is you're having, and man, the view of Paris, it's really something. and it's really relaxing. I think the thing I took away from that experience for me was you don't have to sit and eat like a freaking hog at a trough. You know, in America, we're just, you know, shoveling that crap in.
Yeah, a lot of time we do.
You know, you can very delicately.
Yeah, but you can't be all delicate and stuff eating like the nacho platter. How are you going to be that delicate?
Why can't you be delicate eating the nacho platter?
Well, they're going to want to take it away.
Who's going to take it away?
The restaurant.
Why are they going to take it away?
Well, you can't be all delicate.
Why can't I sit and have my nacho platter delicately?
Because they'll think you're wasting their time and everything. They're waiting for you to eat it like a man.
Yeah, you got to eat it like a man.
Otherwise, they're going to take it away, huh?
Yeah.
Bull crap.
Well, you'd have to convince me.
Because I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go down here to Yolanda's, my favorite Mexican place. I'll get a...
Quit stuttering, man. Spit it out.
Yeah, what's wrong?
Get out of here, both of you clowns. I'll go down to Yolanda's. I'll get me a nacho platter, and I'll eat it delicately and slow.
They'll throw you out.
No, they ain't going to throw me out, man. I was just in there the other day, man. They love me down there. You got to eat, you know, and enjoy the experience, man. That's what it's supposed to be. You got to enjoy the experience. And, you know, and that's probably, like I say, why they don't have all the heart attack. And even though they eat all that cream and all, and I don't like French food, man. And that's not a knock on the French. I just don't dig it, man. I'm not into that bland stuff. You know,
well, they've got like garlic and everything.
Man, you know, I've had their food and I don't dig it. And I got to say this, and I shouldn't say because I know there's, you know, certain, you know, I don't want to piss anybody off, okay? But I got to tell you, I'm walking down the street, I'm looking at the French women, and do I dare, the greatest asses on earth, other than the United States, in Francais.
No kidding.
Yeah, you're talking about like a black girl?
No, not like a black girl. I'm just telling you, what do you mean? But yeah, sure, some of them.
The black ones.
Right. But this girl, man, she had on a pair of capris, and, well, I shouldn't. So, they also, there's a high rate of commuting via walking. There's heavy cigarette use, which suppresses appetite. And so they're very, very healthy over there, except they do have a almost suicidal rate of lung cancer. Now,
really?
No, I'm joking. All right. Thanks a lot for that info, Jace, because that just completely blew my... Man, they smoke cigarettes over there like crazy. New York City teachers are canned for flirting with students over Facebook. Now, isn't that an intelligent thing to do? You New York City teachers, I am telling you, the brain surgery going on with that move is beyond belief. Why you'd get fired, I have no idea. Hi, I'm a teacher. Really? What are you doing? I'm on Facebook flirting with one of my underage students. Great. And dear Barbara Billingsley passes away. Many of us considered her to be our second or third mother, whichever. She was the mom. She was June Cleaver on Leave It to the Beaver. All right, coming up on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and, of course, our website, philhendryshow.com.
It's I can't the Phil eat Hendry bad. Show.
You can, man. I'll eat nachos delicately. Watch me.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Tell us about that one.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. A couple of things to finish up, but Robert wants me to tell the story, and it's true. For some reason, we were talking about Paris. For some reason, I don't know why, and I'm trying to think if there is something that's similar here in the United States that we do. But in Paris, at least, if you walk across a red light as a pedestrian, motorcyclists will try to run you over. And it happened a couple of times. You know, we walk on reds here in the States, in larger cities. We'll walk, L.A. you don't. In L.A. is one of the cities, L.A. is so Midwest, nobody walks on a red in Los Angeles. Unless they're from the East Coast, they will. And all the native-born people from L.A. are like, wow, that guy's like walking against the red light, you know. It's, well, there's no one, I mean, within thousands of miles. But in San Francisco, New York, a lot of places, Miami. In Paris, though, if you walk across on a red and there's a guy on a motorcycle anywhere near you, he will just trying to hit you.
You had a guy kind of veer into you, huh?
Yeah, and it was the middle of the night, man. I mean, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I walked, well, what the hell? I'm going to walk across this red. And I saw the guy. I saw this motorcycle. And over there, they got a few people that ride those big bikes, but most of it is little moped bullcrap or sewing machines, you know. So I saw the guy, and I was all... I was already well aware of what he was going to do, but I wanted to go across the street. So I'm walking, I hear this, and this, sure enough, this dude's like veering right at me, man. It's the funniest thing in the world. You know, and all I need is a baseball bat. You know, if I get, I get across the street, get onto the other curb, and then I turn, and I do like a Jim Rice for the fences, just bam!
Well, what do you do that for? They, like vigilante or something?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It pisses them off, you know? It pisses off the motorcyclists. They just try to run you. Maybe they're being, maybe it's their little cop mentality or something over there. Barbara Billingsley, June, on Leave It to Beaver, died at the age of 94 over the weekend. For those of us who are, you know, my age, Leave It to Beaver was the Brady Bunch for our, you know, generation. The Brady Bunch was the Brady Bunch for that generation. And then I guess they're Saved by the Bell. And I'm sure there is a new show that is reflective of the ideal family that we all wish we lived in or would like to be a part of. But for my generation, it was Leave It to Beaver. June was the mom. And she had to sit there and listen to her psycho little kids, you know, running around talking about how Beaver's feet stunk or, you know, he kept leaving his underwear under the pillow or whatever. In her role as the doting mother of Wally and the Beaver...
What were the filthiest words ever said on TV?
Don't say it, okay?
I heard that one, too.
Anyway, in her role as the doting mother, the filthiest words ever said on TV. The mother of Wally and the Beaver, which lasted from 1957 to 1963, Billingsley exemplified the perfect pearl-wearing homemaker in the fictional town of Mayfield, USA. She was born Barbara Lillian Combs in Los Angeles in 1915. She started acting as a child, appeared in a number of school plays, and after graduating high school, she worked in New York as a fashion model and eventually landed a contract with MGM Studios. Working in the Hollywood studio system, Billingsley typically took unaccredited roles until she landed television work in 1952. And it was in 1957 when she signed with Universal Studios that she made her mark on the American TV landscape with her role as June Cleaver. We've got a couple of Billingsley. Here is Barbara Billingsley, though. Well, here she is first off, I think, from the Leave It to Beaver TV show.
Come in.
Oh, Mrs. Cleaver, may I come in?
Oh, sure, Eddie, come on.
Is Wally home?
Yes, he's up in his room.
I can only see him for a minute because I have to go over and see my girl.
Well, he's up in his room.
When you have a girl, you can't spend all your time with fellas. You have to spend some time with your girl.
Oh, you have a girl, Eddie?
Oh, yes. She goes away to boarding school. My father says that's a pretty good indication her family has money. My father says it doesn't pay to waste time with people who don't count.
Well, it's nice of you to come over here anyway, Eddie.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Cleaver?
Look, Eddie, why don't you run on upstairs, huh?
They hated Eddie Haskell's guts, both the parents. My father says it doesn't pay with people who don't count. Anyway, look at me laughing at that stuff.
Yeah, I noticed that.
It was a funny show to me. I thought it was a funny show. Anyway, while she and the Cleaver clan became a post-war idea for America of the perfect family, Billingsley had difficulty living up to that standard. She was married 3 times. She spent part of her career not baking cookies, but working as a single mom with 2 boys. Speaking of her character in 1997 in TV Guide, Billingsley said she felt that everyone thought the Cleavers were the perfect family. She was the ideal mother. Some people think that she was weakish, but I don't. She was the love in that family. She set a good example for what a wife should be. After Leave It to Beaver went off the air, Billingsley saw a few acting roles, but her career was revived in the 80s with the movie Airplane, where Billingsley turned her white bread reputation on its head as a jive-talking airline passenger.
Mm-hmm. Can I get you something?
It's your mofo butter laying into the bone, jacking me up. Take me.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Cuddy say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
Just hang loose, blood. She's going to catch up on the rebound on the med side.
What it is, Big Mama? My mama raised no dummies. I duck a rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack. Chomp don't want to help. Chomp don't get to help.
Say, can't hang. Say, seven up.
Jive, man. Dude don't got no brains in here.
There's Barbara Billingsley. There you go. Barbara Billingsley from the movie Airplane. She passed on. She was 94 years of age. And will be very missed. She leaves a family. And I think I read the quote from one of her kids saying, you know, she was every bit like June Cleaver. She didn't think she was, but her kids said, yeah, yeah, she was. I could conclude it with the New York teachers fired for flirting on Facebook with students. And I suppose it would have some sort of a poetic resonance. But why press our luck, you know?
Yeah, we heard about beavers. I mean, Mrs. Beaver.
Not Mrs. Beaver, Cleaver.
What?
Okay, I'm going to belt somebody.
Well, man, you're the one brought it up.
I didn't bring up anything. Leave It to Beaver was the name of the show.
Not Leave It to the Beaver.
No, not Leave It to the Beaver. And if I'm going to kill you if you say it. World famous Phil Henry Show, produced by Jason Rance. Technical director is Charles Wygan. Associate producer and screener is Dan Northcraft. PhilHenryShow.com for all your radio comedy needs. Check out our log on site in a few minutes.
Phil Henry.
Check out your log.